Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by Dr. Edmond Demirjian of Middle Village Dental.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Der Narek from St. Sarkis Church, along with our co-host, Mr. Vehbaz Digyan. Welcome to a new episode of the podcast. Let us start our day and our program with a prayer of the prayers of the Armenian Church.
Parik gametsogh gamkere gadarogh der mi toghur vor yes im gamkis hamatsayn entanam ayl arachnortezis vor misht ku pareser gamkit hamatsayn abrim yev vogormeku araradznerut yev inzi pazmamegis. Lord, performer of the wills of those who will good, let me not pursue my own inclinations, but guide me so that I may, at all times, live according to your good will. Have mercy upon your creatures, and upon me, great sinner that I am. So we had a two-week break there, Narek. Well, actually, 1 week off, but it seems like we hadn't met in 2 weeks.
Yes, it feels like it, because last week at this time, I was at the Community Church of Douglaston for the interfaith service. This was something that I was participating for the first time. It was pretty interesting, and we had some community members of St. Sarkis Church who came along and participated in this service.
What's the purpose of the interfaith service? What are we trying to accomplish with those?
I think this is a good way for the community to come together, and Thanksgiving being not a religious feast, we were able to get together and celebrate our unity and our differences as a community living here in this Douglaston-Linlick area.
You smiled a bit when you talked about differences. What are those differences?
It's very interesting that we had participants from the Community Church of Douglaston, the Zion Episcopalian Church, the Roman Catholic Church, Saint Anastasia. We had the Community Church of Linlick and the Community of Marathon, which is a Jewish community. So we had a Jewish Christian traditions coming together and praying together.
Not to mention the Eastern traditions and the more modern Protestant.
Obviously, it wasn't, it was Christian and Jewish. It felt at least that way.
I see. You saw that distinction.
Yes, it was that, you know, and it was really good. Now, I personally do not know if this was something that the community did before or this was the first time, but I'm happy that we were invited and a lot of it happened because of our interfaith service that we had here back in April when we were observing the centennial of the Armenian Genocide, and we invited the various churches to come here, and subsequently they invited us. We had singing, we had two or three pastors who gave small sermons, homilies, and it's interesting, everything was focused on the Old Testament because that is the
That's the common
background,
right,
you know?
Right.
But the Jewish rabbi had brought someone who's he said, the guy wasn't there when we first started the service. He was like, my shofar guy is coming. And we were like, does he have a chauffeur who is late? And we were like, who's your chauffeur? And he was like, no, this is a shofar is coming. And then at the end of the service, the shofar guy came. And yes, he was a guy who had a big horn and he blew the horn. It was very interesting. I've never seen anything like that. And I'm hoping that next year we'll have another event like this, the entire community will be able to participate.
Were there some common themes discussed among the various denominations and or Jewish brothers and sisters?
Unfortunately, for planning purposes of this event, they had a meeting to which I was invited, and that meeting was right when my son Avedis was born.
Ah.
So I wasn't able to attend. So they gave me the assignment of saying a prayer from our tradition, which I was happily able to do so. But for next year, I'm sure that I will be able to participate and being engaged in the conversations with the various denominations.
I've mentioned this before, Der Nareg. I think any opportunity for us, whether it be in the church setting or religious setting or the community at large, it's always a great opportunity for us to be a part of the Douglaston community, because that's what we are. We're an important part of it, and yet we tend to be a little more inclusive and looking inward at our parish, which is a natural tendency. But I think it really is a testament to our focus on developing our relations with the community, and these opportunities we need to continue to encourage our involvement, both as a church, as an organization, and also from our parishioners. On November 21st, the prelacy held its regional conference of the churches in the region. Der Nareg, I understand you offered the keynote remarks. Can you tell us a bit about the day and your involvement?
Sure. It was a presentation that I had. I wasn't by no means the keynote speaker of the day. We had a christening here. Unfortunately, the prelacy planned this kind of later during the season. So we had a christening. I had to stay here in the morning. And then by the time I went there, the first part of the event had already taken place. But we had a good number of representatives from our church, St. Sarkis Church, who were there. So my part was to kind of give a presentation and then facilitate a discussion about the best practices among various parishes of the prelacy. And I need to let our listeners know that participants came from Washington, Philadelphia, the churches here in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Albany, New York. So we were seven churches. And my presentation, the first part of the presentation was about having a clear mission statement. And I gave the example that Jesus had a mission statement. He gave a mission statement to the disciples. And we, without a mission statement, cannot function, because obviously we wouldn't know where are we going, what are we doing as a church. And then I gave some examples of how can we engage people, what are some of the things that we need to do. And, you know, my style, I try always to give examples from our everyday life so that people are more engaging in the conversation. And I posted the entire presentation, which is like 16 minutes, on YouTube for anyone to go and take a listen if they are interested.
Is it necessary for a church to communicate that mission statement to its parish? Because to be honest with you, I mean, I'm a member of St. Sarkis Church. I come to church regularly. I don't know what our mission statement is. Is it important that I know it?
Maybe for the regular parishioner, it's not that important. But for those who are in the position of leadership, it is important for us to know why are we doing the things that we are doing. It's like a preacher who goes to speak on a Sunday without having in their mind what is the message that they're trying to convey. You can say all the good things, you can quote from the Bible, this, that, and the other, but it wouldn't resonate with the people, with the listeners, if you do not know what is the message that you're trying to give. The same thing need to be present in our lives and missions as a church. And part of my speech was focusing on programs versus events, because it is through programs that we are able to transmit our mission statement and bring it to life in our reality.
How was that received? Is that concept well established among the other churches, or is it something that's kind of a new approach?
We know that our churches, in most of the Armenian churches, we oftentimes focus on events. We organize various events, picnics, dinner dances. These are events, and they create clients. You come here for this picnic because the food is good. You go there because the music is nice. But when you have programs, you have a specific audience in your mind, you're growing, and the focus is spirituality rather than the social gathering. So I'm not discrediting the social aspect of the church. The social gathering has its values, but we as a church, we need to focus on the spirituality and we need to focus on the growth.
And I think the events typically fall within the context of each individual program. So they're not a bunch of, like a collection of loosely correlated events. They're events that fall within the premise behind a guiding principle for a program. For example, when you do youth ministry, you have a series of events that fall under the youth ministry umbrella to engage the youth and get them involved. And some of them are social and some of them are spiritual. And we've talked about many of them here on the podcast.
Sure, but that is a program. The youth ministry itself is a program. It's not a random event that happens once a year. So I encouraged the participants to focus on these kinds of, planned events, not the random ones. And I hope that people found a merit in what was presented, and hopefully we'll start focusing more on programs versus events.
Der Nareg, it is now the season of Advent, and it's a term that is used often in the life of the Armenian Church, and my understanding, the Eastern churches, where we are waiting and preparing for the celebration of the Nativity of Jesus at Christmas. I'm personally not very aware of what the various components of Advent are. Perhaps some of our listeners are. Can you enlighten us about beyond just the preparation, what does it mean to be in the Advent season, and what are the various events or steps that we take in preparation for Christ's revelation?
I will try. Advent is a Latin word, which means the coming. The Armenian version of Advent is Hisnak, which literally means 50 days. We are observing the 50 days prior to the celebration of Christmas, which in our church, in our tradition, is celebrated on January 6th. So this is a period that the church helps us to prepare to receive the Lord in our hearts and in our lives. Just like Easter, prior to Easter, we have 50 days of fasting. This is also a period of fasting. But for some reason, we focus a lot more on the preparation for Easter, and this time of the year, the Advent season, is kind of left to the observance of each and every individual of the Armenian church. So I do not know a lot of people who...
Yeah, I can tell you I've never heard of anybody fasting during Advent, which would be very challenging, but because it seems that it's Thanksgiving falls within Advent, and I can't imagine ever fasting in the United States on Thanksgiving Day. It's the national holiday of all holidays.
Sure. But the other difference also is that during Lent, prior to Easter, you have every Sunday with a theme and the name that is taken directly from the gospel. It is preparing us in a journey to meet the risen Lord. Mm-hmm. Here you have the themes, but you don't have the names. So unless you're coming every Sunday and following that chain of events that are happening in the gospel, you will not really know what's the purpose of the Advent. And when we follow the Sunday Gospel readings, we come clearly to understand that it is about preparing us. It is inviting us to change, to humble ourselves, to meet the baby Jesus in the manger. So the Sunday Gospels, which are heavily focused on the readings from the Gospel of Luke, are telling us to do that exactly, not to focus on the earthly materials, to try to seek what is important, try to be part of the family of our Lord Jesus Christ, try to be fruitful and examine ourselves. So these are readings and reflections that help us to grow and be ready for the season of Christmas. However, unfortunately, because of the nature of our culture, most of the people are out there trying to do their shoppings, are away from church.
Well, that's the commercialization of Christmas. That's been the trend for the last, 70 years in the United States? And it just keeps getting worse with Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which I think has overtaken Black Friday as the big shopping day. Just a footnote. But what does the church try to convey during this time frame by way of programs within the liturgy? Are there special services beyond just the readings?
The liturgy does not change. The liturgy stays the same. But the biggest message that the church is trying to give to us, that the nativity is the biggest event of history, because God took upon himself flesh. God became just like one of us so that we can relate to God. God became human so that God will help us to become divine. This is the essence of our Orthodox theology, and that is actualized in the scene of nativity when Jesus is born. This Sunday, December 6, following church services, we have an event. Our Ladies Guild has organized an event with the name Brunch at the North Pole. I have with us Mrs. Sonia Nenejian, who is a member of the Ladies Guild and a member of the Board of Trustees of our church, who will give us more information about the event. Sonia, Brunch at the North Pole, that sounds exciting. What can you tell us about the event?
This Sunday, on December 6th, at 1 p.m. following church services, we will be celebrating our second annual holiday party. And this year we decided to change it up a bit. Last year we had a cookie decorating party. And this year we decided to serve brunch at the North Pole for the children. And we will be serving fresh pancakes with all the trimmings and homemade French toast and many other calorie-free desserts. We will be having entertainment for the children. This year, backed by popular demand, we had it last year, and it was phenomenal. The kids had a great time, and so did the families. The holiday photo booth, and there will be surprise visitors whom will be entertaining the kids. And there will also be time for the children to write a letter to Santa. So make sure they know what they want for Christmas. And we hope that you all will be able to join us for a fun-filled afternoon with holiday funs and activities for kids.
It sounds like you guys have planned something for each and every member of the family. This event is not only for children. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. It's for the entire family, for young, for old, for grandparents. Anybody is welcome to join us.
Tell us a little bit more about the details. Are we taking reservations? What do we need to do to be part of this celebration on Sunday?
We are taking reservations, but you can come as you please. There will be many, many tables open for anybody to sit after church. So you're more than welcome to join.
And on the flyer, it says $15 per child. How is that working?
That is, we're only taking money from the children. And because of the activities and the photo booths and the entertainment and also the food, but we're not charging adults.
I hope that our listeners are encouraged to join us, to be with us this Sunday. I remember last year we had the cookie decorating contest, and it sounds like you guys are trying to stay away from calories, and you mentioned it's calorie-free desserts that you're serving.
Yes, especially around the holidays.
But the spirit is there, and I hope that by sharing this meal together and spending time together, the spirit of Christmas will be something that all of us will observe this Sunday.
Yes.
Sonia, thank you very much. I will see you Sunday. Take care.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Let's shift gears now and let's talk about something different. The Armenian communities throughout the world are celebrating the 125th anniversary of the ARF, the Armenian Revolutionary Federation. And this Saturday, there is a celebration at the Woodside Armenia Center, where we will have a guest speaker, Mr. Hayk Oshagan, who is the chairman of the ARF Eastern Region Central Committee. Mr. Oshagan is joining us on the phone. Baron Oshagan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Tell us why it is important to celebrate this important milestone in the history of the ARF.
The ARF represents more than just a political organization. The ARF represents a spirit of the Armenian nation that has endured for 125 years. It's a spirit at the core of the ARF, but it's actually at the core, I think, of the Armenian nation, because the ARF, in a really fundamental way, is born out of our nation. The sense, the idea of dedication, the idea of sacrifice, the idea of struggle, the idea that our nation is united, that we have a homeland, that we will be free, that we will fight for our independence. These sort of central concepts that are the cornerstones of the ARF are also essential concepts to the Armenian nation as a whole. And so celebrating 125 years of the organization is in many ways celebrating 125 years of the modern Armenian nation.
You spoke about the spirit, and it sounds like that spirit has been very consistent throughout the past 125 years, although the circumstances have changed, but that spirit has carried on. Now, let's talk about the past few years, and let me ask you, what are some of the challenges that we as Armenians are facing, and how the ARF is facing those challenges?
You know, we are a complicated nation. We are spread all over the world, and we have a homeland that is often under attack. We have Gharapa under siege. We have Jabakh that is trying to establish its national sense of identity. We have communities spread across the world, and the Syrian one right now is under extreme difficulty. This is a very complex picture, and when you talk about challenges, you're talking about a national set of challenges, and when you, on top of that, consider that you are talking about one political organization that faces and tries to confront and tries to overcome all of these challenges, it's a unique situation. There is no other nation around the world, no other people that have an organization like the Armenian Revolutionary Federation that is dedicated to the nation as a whole. And in that context, our challenges are many. And one way to discuss them is to look at challenges in Armenia and challenges in the diaspora separately. I think in terms of Armenia, the central issue is, one is security, obviously. Security that is threatening in a fundamental way the sovereignty of the nation. This is the closing of the border with Turkey, the closing of the border by Azerbaijan, the state of war with Azerbaijan, the uneasy truce at the border where still Azerbaijan keeps on shooting and taking pot shots at our soldiers. This insecurity is a certain challenge. I mean, it's a key challenge that faces our nation, and it affects a lot of other things within Armenia itself. One of the things affected, obviously, is the economy. Armenia's economy is challenged. It's, you know, the only channel, the only routes for export are through Georgia and Iran. It's caused huge unemployment in Armenia. It's caused Russian control of the of most of the industries in Armenia. It's caused a large emigration from Armenia into Russia by you know, by a substantial number of Armenians leaving. 20% of Armenia's GDP is from people who are outside of the nation sending money to their relatives. On top of the economy, it is very significant, and it's a continuing issue. And the economic, and until the economy is faced and improves, and part of this also, of course, involves corruption in Armenia, and the oligarchs and their control of the economy, in addition to the Russian control of the economy, until these things are alleviated, the economy is going to struggle. The third issue, so first is national security, the second is the economy, in my opinion, and the third is democracy in Armenia. Democracy has two aspects to it. One is civic culture in Armenia, that is, people's engagement in politics, people's voice in politics, people's willing to organize and create organizations and groups to deal with social issues and participate in civic activities. And the second part of democracy is the government itself. Armenia's current presidential system is unbalanced. It puts too much power into the hands of the president and his appointed cabinet. He has the power to dissolve the National Assembly. He is in charge of the judiciary in some real sense. So there is not real independence of different branches of government as we have in the U.S. And so the government is too heavily centralized in the hands of one person, the president, to the exclusion of all the other voices that make up Armenia's population. And the current debate on moving from a presidential system to a parliamentary system, I think, is a key discussion in Armenian politics, one that the ARF has supported. In fact, the ARF supported a parliamentary governmental system 20 years ago, that we thought that would be the fairest way of having representation and voice in government by all the various parties in Armenia. And so we are today, as we have always been for the last 20 years, in favor of a parliamentary system where the different parties have to come up with a coalition to rule and govern, as opposed to a single person and a single party winning and running the entire show. To me, these are the main challenges that we face in Armenia: the economy, its national sovereignty, security, and democracy. And the ARF is involved in all of these, in its efforts to improve Armenia's situation. When we look at the diaspora, we're facing with a different set of challenges. Here we have our widespread communities. The ARF is organized in over 20 different countries. And the challenge here is to maintain the Armenian nation on you know, foreign lands, on foreign shores. Here the issues become one of education, one of community investment, supporting our organizations, the youth organizations, you know, athletic organizations, philanthropic organizations, church organizations, and churches. The effort here and the struggle here has always been to maintain the Armenian nation. And this is a huge challenge. There is no other example of an organization that has tasked itself with trying to maintain a diaspora nation. The Jewish people have a diaspora. Lots of other countries have smaller diasporas. Nations have small diasporas. But there is no case for a single organization to oversee as much of this challenge as the ARF tries to oversee.
Since we're talking about the diaspora, let me ask you specifically about Syria, because as you mentioned in your opening segment, that Syria in itself is a challenge. What can you tell us about what's happening in Syria and what is the plan of the ARF when it comes to the Armenian communities in Syria?
The Syrian situation is dire, and it's been this way for the last 4 years. Obviously, our communities are under the same stress that all communities in Syria are under, but the additional one, of course, of being a Christian minority in a country that is often under attack by extremist Muslim forces like ISIL. The communities face shortages of every kind. They are under constant threat, and we have done everything we could. We have that we can to come to the aid of the Syrian community. We have met with the State Department, for example. That was a couple of months ago, 3 months ago, because as far as we can tell, United Nations. United Nations aid is not reaching the Armenian communities in Syria. The Armenian government, we feel, is not supporting sufficiently the refugees, Syrian refugees in Armenia. And the government and UN aid is not reaching sufficiently Armenian, Syrian refugees in Lebanon. So we have three substantial communities of Syrian Armenians in Syria, in Armenia, and in Lebanon, all of whom are under great duress. We know firsthand the difficulty of the Armenian communities in Lebanon, Syrian communities in Lebanon, living the whole families to a single room, for example, issues of unemployment, issues of housing, food. In Armenia, of course, the situation is better, but the Armenian state there is heavily tasked with finding helpful resources to help the Syrian Armenians. We feel that the U.S. government and the United Nations can do a lot more. And so we've met and we continue to pressure the government as much as we can, our government, to come to the assistance of Syrian Armenians.
Are you saying, but Mr. Oshagan, are you saying that the Armenian government can also do a little bit more to the Syrian Armenians in Armenia?
We feel that the U.S. government can assist the Armenian government more than it has in providing assistance for the refugees who are in Armenia. When you compare the per capita assistance money that goes to countries which house Syrian refugees, Armenia gets per capita one of the smallest amounts of U.S. assistance compared to other countries. For example, Jordan has the most number of Syrian refugees, but Jordan also gets a substantial amount of money from the U.S. government. Turkey has now come to an agreement for $3 billion in aid for its Syrian refugees. Armenia doesn't have the same number of refugees, but per capita we get very little support from the U.S. government. And we have brought this to the attention of the State Department in an effort to make it fairer, our nation's commitment to the refugee problem.
Excellent. This year was a significant year for us. We observed the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide. What was the perspective or the involvement of the ARF in the overall process of the observances? Has this been an important year for the ARF?
I think it's been a critical year, a landmark year, if you will. We have... our Haitat activities, our ANCA and the ANC Eastern Region and Western Region organizations have fought for 50, 60 years for recognition of the Armenian genocide. And this has been our general perspective, that is, we need to get the various governments to recognize the Armenian genocide and through recognition bring pressure on Turkey to recognize the Armenian genocide. This year, leading up, I think, for the last couple of years, but certainly this year, on the 100th anniversary, we have made a commitment to move not just on recognition, but to advance the argument for reparations also. That is, it's not enough for recognition to be our agenda. We need to also argue for reparations, because reparations is actually ultimately what we want. When you commit a crime, there are consequences. When you commit the crime of genocide, there are serious consequences. We need to discuss what it is that Turkey needs to do. we need to bring to the table a reparations agenda at some point, where we can expect certain things from the criminal to make whole again the nation that it tried to destroy. This push towards reparations was, I think, the single most important aspect of the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide. We need to start thinking more along these lines. We need to have our nation think more along these lines. We need to make Turkey aware that there is reparations at the end of this argument, and that it is not simply recognition, but more is expected.
This Saturday, you are the keynote speaker, and we want our listeners, we want to entice them to be present at the event. Can you tell us a synopsis of your speech? What are some of the things that they should be expecting when they come to the Armenian Center at Woodside this Saturday?
Well, there are two things at this center this Saturday. I will be speaking, but also speaking will be Nesha Sarkisian, who we have brought over from Syria. He is a member of the emergency relief team in Syria, and he's a member of the Central Committee, ARF Central Committee of Syria. So he is uniquely positioned to discuss and present to us what is happening in Syria from the ground, from being involved in every detail of it. We have brought, the ARF of this region has brought Inger Nurses here to the U.S., and we are having him visit the different communities, and he has a presentation with video as well to discuss and to show and to make understandable the difficulty of the Syrian community in Syria. And he will be visiting New York on that Saturday. So in addition to my speech, anyone coming, and I hope everyone comes, will get a chance to see and hear in greater detail than ever has been possible before about what's going on in Halab, in Syria, on the ground. In addition, of course, there will be my speech. I will speak of the challenges that the ARF faces, and I will speak of the greatest challenge of the ARF. I think, you know, it's fair to say that we have gone through as an organization, as a nation, through a few different phases. If the first phase of the ARF is from 1890, its founding and its activities organizing resistance and uniting the people in Armenia, its second phase would be the independence of Armenia from 1918, and running the government and trying to create, to establish the independence and an independent Armenia. The third phase, arguably then, is the diasporan phase, where the ARF is not in Armenia any longer, but is in charge of the diaspora. Today, I think we are in a different phase. We're a different era, and we've been in this since the independence of Armenia, where we as an organization are both in Armenia and outside. And this is a unique challenge, I think. It's a unique challenge for the ARF to find a way to create a national agenda. This is, I think, the greatest challenge we have faced. People spread across the world, people in the homeland, the people in the diaspora, need to have a sense of one nation. And the ARF's attention has to develop the sense of a single national identity, not just diaspora, not just Armenia, but the USK, the nation. And this agenda, this national agenda, is something critical, I think. And we are, the ARF is the only organization capable of developing this, and it will be, I think, essential for our nation to move forward in its both of its parts, the diaspora and the Armenian.
The ARF 125th anniversary celebration is hosted by the New York Armenga Rogomide and Haig Oshagan. You will be there this Saturday, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there. In the meantime, I would like to thank you very much for this opportunity and the time you devoted for us for this interview.
Thank you for making the time, and I look forward to seeing you there also. Thank you.
Let's do the Bible reading and reflection now. This is something that we do every week here on the podcast. Today's reading is from the Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to St. Matthew, chapter 10, verses 40 to 42.
Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward.
The word of the Lord. This is part of the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ, which sometimes could be pretty difficult to understand and also to embrace. But this is part of our faith, and this is part of our spirituality. So last month in November, when we had the family worship, my talk, my speech, or the little homily, I should say, that I gave to the kids was about the life of thanks living, to express gratitude to God for all the gifts that God has given to us by sharing or doing a little something to the people who are around us. And obviously, what I spoke to our children that day comes from here, where Jesus says, whoever gives a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of the disciples, truly I tell you, none of this will lose their reward. So our faith is about the way that we live our lives. It's about the way that we manifest our beliefs. It's not about the way that we talk, but it's about the way that we live. But that being said, sometimes we are cautious. We don't want to help the ones who we think they are not worthy of our help. Like, I'm sure you've heard this before. When we try to give a little help to someone who is on the street asking for your dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard this before. People will reject to do that because they would say, oh, if we give him the dollar, they would go and buy
alcohol.
Probably alcohol or drugs. How do you react?
Well, I tend to be sort of a by-the-book law enforcement, law and order type of person. So I do suggest that people not give handouts on the street, because the likelihood is that the person is going to go and spend that money on something that they shouldn't be consuming. So more likely, I tell people, and I've done this myself, where I'll take someone and say, hey, let me buy you a sandwich. And that's how I try to give, if I'm going to give it on an individual level. But of course, most of us are inclined to donate and to give to charity and to give to underprivileged. And that comes in the form of donations that are a lot more structured and in the context of an organization. So that's how I try to practice that principle in my life, in terms of giving donations and giving a percentage of your earnings. They used to call that alms, I believe.
Almsgiving, yeah, yes.
Alms.
I agree with you, and I've done that in the past. I would do that, you know, I would try to buy something to the one who needs it. But, you know, when you're driving in, let's say, the Cross Bronx Expressway, and it happened to me a number of times, you know, you're stuck in traffic, you cannot get out of the expressway to buy a sandwich to someone. I would give money. And I would think, this is on them. If they are making the wrong choices, it's on them. But for me, I'm trying to see a human person who is in need. And if my little dollar, a dollar that I'm giving, will do something for them.
Well, not to mention, there's also the hazard that goes along with it. You mentioned the Cross Bronx Expressway. There shouldn't be people walking on the Cross Bronx Expressway. And for our listeners outside of the greater New York area, it's a very large highway. It's like standing in the middle of 95 for folks up in New England or down in D.C. So it's not the best way to to try to give to underprivileged or struggling folks. But I understand that the compassion you would feel for people like that.
And I'm trying to not to make this a Law and Order episode. This is the podcast, by the way, with Der Nadegenve.
Well, but you're asking me questions. I'm going to answer them honestly.
Yes. Thank you very for your honesty, Ve. But going back to the gospel reading, whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And what I'm reading here is that, you know, sometimes we are too busy trying to find the credentials of the person that we are welcoming. But what Jesus is trying to teach us here is to have an open heart, an open mind, and try to see the dignity of the human person and try to welcome them by giving them the utmost respect. And with that, even if the person who is receiving our respect may not see it, God will see it and God will reward us for that.
No, that's pretty clear, didn't it? I mean, I think that's that God is going to smile upon you for your effort because it's what your intentions were. And that intention was to make someone's day a little better, especially somebody struggling like that. But I have a couple of questions. What does it mean when you say when you welcome a prophet in the name of a prophet?
In this reading, Jesus is talking about the disciples who would go and preach the word, and clearly they would preach about Jesus Christ. So Jesus is encouraging us not to focus too much on who is bringing to you the message, but to focus more on what the message is. And the message clearly is about the salvation, is about him. And this has been widely practiced in the life of the church when, you know, sometimes people have doubted the merit of the priest who is administrating any sacrament. At that moment, the sacrament is what matters, not the priest. I don't care if the priest is the best priest or the worst priest. That doesn't add or diminish the value of the sacrament. The sacrament is Jesus Christ himself. And when we approach it from that perspective, the person there is just doing their job. We're going there to be with Jesus and to receive Jesus. So I think that's what Jesus is trying to tell us here in this reading. The hymn today is called Nor Sion Zanyal Mangung. This is a hymn that we sing during the sacrament of baptism in our church. I hope you will enjoy listening to this hymn. We will be back next week with a new episode of the podcast. In the meantime, I would like to thank all of our listeners, our sponsors, my co-host, Mr. Veh Bezdigyan, our producer, Mr. Greg Dostor. I pray that the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ will be always in your hearts. Amen.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Dr. Edmond Demirjian of Middle Village Dental. If you'd like to sponsor future episodes, please contact the St. Sarkis Church office at 718-224-2275.